You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to a minibus on the way to Brisbane Airport after a very successful THE Young University Summit. I'm here on the bus with the Summit's team content manager, Tim Sawula, and rankings editor, Phil Batey. This is John Gill, THE editor, and I think this is one of our more unique summits, Phil, because whereas very often we're talking to institutions of every colour and stripe, here at the Young Summit we're talking to people who all have one thing in common, and that's their youth. Obviously we also launched the Young University's ranking while we were here in Brisbane too. And do you think that sort of youth gives this summit a particular flavour? Do you leave, as you sort of reflect as we make our way to the airport, do you reflect that these universities do have something distinctive, something in common that sets them apart and gives them a particularly unique mission? I don't know what your sort of leaving thoughts are.
There's definitely a sense of community and camaraderie. I do love this event, actually, because there seems to be a common purpose. You've got incredible diversity in the room. We had 31 different countries represented, about 200 individuals in the room. There's possibly a sense that they're coming from a position of being underdogs. You know, they're less prestigious, they're not the household names like the ancient elites or the red bricks in the UK. They've often perhaps felt, you know, they're less rich, they're less prestigious, they have lower reputations. But there's a real common purpose around being innovative, being dynamic, and particularly around the mission, I think, very focused on applied research, very focused on education. And that's a particular feature around the summit, of really focusing not on research strategy and leadership issues, but actually the nuts and bolts of educating young people for a very changing and very uncertain future workplace.
Yeah, and Tim, one of the threads that ran through the summit was, I suppose, innovation around delivering the curriculum, new ways of preparing students for jobs that, you know, careers that are much less defined than they used to be. That was a one particular theme. We also heard from students themselves, which is surprisingly a rarity at events where academics get together to talk to one another about higher education. It was really interesting to hear those voices. Were there any sort of particular bits of that conversation that jumped out at you?
I think that an enormous credit should be made to the ATN, the Australian Technological Universities Network, who arranged to have five representatives of those five universities coming and speaking, and the students put an enormous amount of effort in, but it was returned, rewarded by great engagement from our university leaders, of whom there was almost 100 pledges by the end of their session, their workshop, which started the morning, about what they would all do to try and improve and their university student relations, and how they can empower the student body to work more closely with the leadership, so that they can come away with, I think, the idea of having an education from a university rather than just a degree was the big theme that went through that session. And in a sense, I think that surprised quite a lot of the university leaders, because so much of our summit prior on the first day was talking about, you know, measuring. We had the ranking launch, and about measuring how universities, young universities, can improve and what metrics are most appropriate for their excellence. But getting the students in on this morning and talking about education in a round and preparing them for jobs that don't exist yet, and, you know, what their return from their investments would be of their time, was much more prevalent and really rewarding.
Yeah, and sorry, Phil, another reflection I have, I mean, just flipping from students to the academic staff themselves, I did a session this morning with about 20, mainly presidents, but also people involved in hiring faculty. And it was really interesting to hear the different views from, you know, we sort of group these universities together as a sort of common grouping because they're all young. But there were actually real differences by nation too. You had sort of, some of the Asian institutions where the investment is so strong, you know, and they had sort of incredibly ambitious plans. And also, you know, some quite ruthless approaches to improving the quality of their faculty. You know, there was talk about 200 sort of disengaging 200 academics so that you get 200 more in who are of higher quality, and that's a euphemism for sort of asking them to leave. And then there were others in the room that were saying, well, actually, look, you know, we just wouldn't do that in our country. That's not, you know. So there's very different approaches being taken to the development of young universities, and that endless chase, partly driven by rankings, of course, to try and rise up and, you know, start to sort of actually challenge the established elites that we know all about. I mean, Phil, as you obviously launched the rankings while you were here in Brisbane too. Do you have any reflections on the countries that are doing particularly well, or the parts of the world that are maybe, you know, slightly behind in terms of investment and the development of their younger universities?
Yeah, I mean, the clear winners from the rankings were, you know, Hong Kong, I think Singapore, and South Korea. You know, you have the top 10 is actually dominated by Asia now, with five of the top 10 are Asian universities. POSTECH in South Korea, KAIST in South Korea, and then you've got Nanyang Technological University of Singapore, and Hong Kong UST. And they're characterized, I think, by what you're saying. There is a clear sense at the government level that universities are driving the knowledge economy. They are very generously supported by government, who see the universities as a fundamental part of the future success of those nations, of those regions. And that's in contrast to some of the more challenged institutions in Italy and Spain and Southern Europe, which is an issue. But one of the things I think is interesting is that because they lack some of these big brands, because they don't have these big names that everyone's heard of, it does almost mean they have to work a bit harder. Going back to the educational element, I think there's a genuine sense in some of the older prestigious universities that the students are just seeking the certificate, and the badge on the certificate, the logo, is all they care about, and there's a sense that they genuinely are less engaged in their learning as long as they get the credentials of having graduated from the University of X. Whereas these institutions, I think, do have to deliver employment outcomes, have very clear deliverables, and actually really work hard on the student experience. I think that is a key difference.
Yeah. One of the things I found quite inspiring, actually, was in terms of we had a big focus on diversity and leadership and how institutions can improve their diversity of faculty and students, but the same that from these young institutions, there was a real will that they could grow their reputation by really being outliers in that and making quite radical steps to be leaders and to really kind of show the way forward of practicing, you know, what most people tend to preach. They were actually able to do it, and that's how they can improve their reputation. That's how they can be seen as real beacons and have that bigger social impact that permeates down to their students, rather than relying on 100-year-old brand and, you know, great researcher.
I suppose that's the, you know, as we enter a tunnel and approach Brisbane Airport, that's the question that will remain from this summit and remains to be answered, whether young universities, as they develop, as the investment goes in, as they really strive to compete with the older established institutions, and indeed as they age themselves, they manage to maintain the point of difference and the things that make them unique. And that's a question that we put to some of our speakers hailing from across the planet, speakers from South Africa, from the US, from Australia, Singapore and elsewhere. And we'll just leave you with a few voices from some of those people who are at our summit here in Brisbane and their thoughts on where next for young universities.
Alison Lloyd. I'm from Hong Kong Polytechnic University, Director of Institutional Research and Planning. Well, I think one of the advantages of young universities is their dynamism, their ability to be agile. We've heard a lot about agility and their ability to be flexible. And I think for every institution, we need to stay true to our mission. And I think for young universities, there is a need for role differentiation a lot more. While we do admire the achievements of some of our more well-established universities, I think that if we focus on preparing our younger generation for a much more disruptive, sort of fast-paced world, and for us, our focus is very much on the ability to translate ideas into real-life impact. And I believe that if you do those two well, that good rankings will come. And your graduates will shine in their respective fields. So I think, yes, young universities do have to differentiate themselves and find their own character.
So I'm here with Ermeng Hua, who's Vice President of International Affairs at Nanyang Technological University. The question we're asking here at the Young University Summit is whether for young universities to improve and indeed to challenge the elites, the older, more historic universities, whether they need to be radically different, follow a completely different path from those older institutions, or whether they need to try and replicate and indeed follow a very familiar path. What would your perspective on that be?
I think as young university, in order to really challenge the more established universities, the young university will have to really adopt a more strategic kind of approach in this whole process. Because if you try to so-called duplicate or replicate whatever they do, then you are going to continue to be the second to the more established university. Mm. And I think in this process, this strategy will have to include a very kind of recruitment of a faculty from around the world. I think the people is most important in this whole process. And because you have quality faculty coming to the university, they can compete for research money. They can bring in their excellent kind of teaching experience and really can make the whole campus even more vibrant and really giving the student a wonderful experience. Mm.
And if people, in your session you said people, that's the most important thing. If that's the case, do you think that for young universities to do something radically different from older institutions, they need to get their talent, the people they recruit, at an early age? Is it a question of getting people young before they go into older universities and develop an established way of doing things? Do you need to get those early career researchers, the younger teachers, and have them when they're still coming in with fresh ideas? Is that the best approach?
Well, I think the way we do it at NTU is actually that we have a two-pronged approach. Number one is to attract some of the really eminent scientists to come, because the eminent scientists, they can also act as a magnet, so to speak, you know, to bring in the more talented postdoc or young faculty to join the group. At the same time, we are also trying to recruit some of the very best, what we call early stage researchers. These are excellent researchers. They will be act as a like next generation of the faculty. So I think the two-pronged approach will be actually quite important.
Yeah,
in my view.
Okay,
yeah.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. Okay. Yeah, lovely.
Peter Coldrick, Vice Chancellor of QUT.
And so, Peter, would you say that for young universities to be successful, the answer is to be more dynamic, more distinctive, and stand out from their established rivals? Or do you think that the more established patterns for success of your mature universities is something that needs to be followed?
Younger universities must always be distinctive. There is absolutely no advantage in copying the well-worn paths. It's important to respect the traditions of the older established players and learn many things from them. But at the same time, one of the advantages of immaturity is perhaps a level of courage, or whatever it happens to be, that allows greater freedom and less restriction. I should also add that young universities can fall into the habits of older players very quickly. And so it shouldn't be assumed that because you're young, you will be agile and dynamic, but you have a better opportunity to be that than perhaps in an older institution, which if well run, well led, may have those characteristics. So it's a trade-off. Older universities have reputation and prestige and maturity. Younger universities should have less of the restrictions I'm being distracted by that noise.
Sorry.
Yeah. Should have less of the restrictions and therefore be free to move. In terms of my own university, QUT, we did things like set up the world's first creative industries faculty, which involved disestablishing an arts faculty But that's because the other institutions in this town were doing the arts and humanities in the traditional form extremely well. Whereas we thought, where were the opportunities for us as a new player? They were in the creative economy, built accordingly. And we're not the only ones who've done those sorts of things, but and there are some areas in which you might go head-to-head in terms of the undergraduate market, but the student market and the parent market will understand there are different attributes and qualities attached to each of the institutions, and all of those together make a rich competitive environment.
And from this summit, is there anything that's surprised you? Have you heard anything that stood out particularly that we all kind of take away and make you think a bit about your strategies here at QUT and your senior leadership, your approaches?
I think the best session of a conference like this is usually, if you have it, a student session, because the students are unpredictable, they're honest, they're forthright, they're fearless. They have a view of what their experience is currently or what their recent experience has been. And so I find those sessions the most unpredictable, the most challenging, but perhaps the most nourishing.
Hi, I'm Maria Clave. I'm president of Harvey Mudd College. I think the great thing about being a young university is you get a chance to look at what society needs now and a chance to really create that. And if you're an established university, you've got so much of a legacy and a tradition, and if you're already particularly a very successful one, it's incredibly hard to change. So I think young universities should look at what society needs now, what they need in the future, and they should innovate. They should take the chance to do things completely differently.
I'm here with Iron Rensberg, who's Vice Chancellor of the University of Johannesburg. And Iron, we're asking, I think, a fairly straightforward question, I hope, of delegates at the Young University Summit, which is simply this. For more young universities to improve, is it the most sensible strategy for them on the whole to try and be different, forge their own path, differentiate themselves from older universities, or is the right strategy, in fact, to try and emulate the things that universities who have been around for a couple of hundred years do and have done very well?
I think it's a combination of these. It would be a fundamental mistake to cut and paste strategy from the more established universities. On the other hand, it would be foolish just to cut your path. I think young universities clearly are demonstrating that they are quite capable of rising to the challenges of tomorrow. But I think it's important for us to learn from each other, whether it is within the Young Universities Group or across the established and young universities group. So I think that there's a lot to learn, and important gatherings like here at QUT with THU today is an enormous opportunity for us to share and to learn together and to continue to build our institutions so that they can rise truly to the challenges of tomorrow.
So, Fernando Leon Garcia, president of Satis University, Baja California, Mexico. I believe that events such as the one that is being organized by Times Higher Education is one where definitely younger emerging institutions can learn from. Although in doing so, institutions need to reflect and look at not only what established institutions are doing, but they need to reflect on their own mission, on their own regions of service, and probably in that context begin to look for things that will make them distinctive, not the same in every aspect as well-established, traditional, long-serving institutions. So I think the event raises a high level of awareness of things that you can incorporate, but that you need to adjust based on who you are, where you are, and then what strategy you can use to be better and to position yourself.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.